How we doing, everybody? And welcome back to the Esports Forever podcast. My name is Ryan B. Hebert, alongside Jacob Schrader, and we are bringing you the latest in esports, NFT, and crypto news. Before we get started, though, let's talk about our sponsor, EMP.money. Jacob?
Of course. So EMP Money, we're back above peg, actually, right? Which is the big news if you've been watching
that.
This podcast.
I saw that, yep.
You'll know EMP regulates based on the assumption or the premise that we want EMP tokens to be pegged to the price of Ethereum, right? That's super bullish in its own right because Ethereum's not going anywhere, right? We provide fractionalized ETH on the Binance Smart Chain, and it's pegged really closely and really well to the price of ETH at a 4,000-to-1 ratio through all of the game theory signage mechanics that exist on the EMP Money website and in our ecosystem. Right. So being above peg means that if you own any e-shares, if you've been farming e-shares, it's time to now put them in the boardroom, because by putting them in the boardroom, you're exposing yourself to just fresh EMP that's being minted. Right. The most plentiful way that EMP is minted is through the boardroom. So if you have shares, if you want to buy shares, they're still relatively inexpensive, not financial advice, to where they may go. So now is a great time. We're at 1.27, right? Which is pretty healthy above peg. Peg is 1.01, but we need to get higher, and we will get higher. So it's a great time, whether you want to buy into the farms or, into e-shares. Obviously none of this is financial advice. You should do your own research, but things are going strong for EMP Money. So if you haven't checked them out already, we'll throw some links in there and do a giveaway for some EMP tokens today on the stream.
Great. Thank you so much, Jacob. And a big shout out once again to EMP.money, a wonderful sponsor for us. And we love working with them. Getting started right away here, Shroud. We talked about him last week coming back, joining the official Valorant roster for the professional Valorant League going on right now. You know, after 1,000+ hours of content creation in Valorant, finally getting serious about going pro once again, Shroud being famous for his work in Counter-Strike from about 2014 to 2017 before he retired, now coming out of retirement to play Valorant, has finally come forward and changed his stance and says, and has admitted, Valorant is a harder game, period. It's just, you know, at first he thought it had less distractions and, you know, wasn't as complex as CSGO. And, you know, I think after the article mentions that after he's repeatedly gotten beaten on stream by people who probably were not at the same level as him, he has straight up said, you know what, this is a much harder game. And I think that's so cool to see that a player at that skill level, who, you know, is so familiar with point and click FPS games like that, where literally it's one shot and you're dead. That's how good this game is, right? Like you need to be that good that you are one-shotting people, headshot, boom, they're dead. They don't get a chance to even see you or even shoot back at you. And the reflexes that you have to have for something like that, it's crazy. Very crazy. So it's pretty cool to hear a player coming back and being honest. There's nothing better than a little bit of honesty, I got to say.
Yeah. You know, to me, Valorant, it's just pretty clear, right? There's more creativity that goes into it. Where you can't build walls in CSGO. You can't, you know, a lot of the abilities are, you know, messing with your opponent's vision, right? Messing with their speed a little bit. But a lot of it is vision-based, right? It's figuring out what angles they have, what angles you need covered, and then making your moves. I like Valorant a lot. I used to watch a ton of it right when it came out. I got my boy a beta drop. He was hyped.
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, this makes sense, right? They're different games, right? Valorant is the North American version of CSGO. It's got more creativity to it. It's got more colors. It's got all that. It's a Riot game game. You know, I wonder, is Shroud still really, really good at competitive Valorant? You know, do you know about that?
Well, you know, he played a ton on stream. So that's the thing. He retired from pro CSGO and then became a really popular streamer. And he's played a lot of time into Valorant. But I think since he's, you know, was officially signed on to that esports team last week, he's probably gotten a lot more serious, has had some really great practice with some really great players, and he's like, wow, this is a lot harder than facing scrubs on the ranked ladder. So it's It's probably where he's coming from. Probably.
Probably.
So, yeah, we'll see how he does. We'll see how he does. Speaking of Riot, this is a really cool article from Esports Insider talking about a project called Project Striker. One of these locations being focused in Dublin, Ireland, kind of on the outskirts of the city, in what used to be a nightclub, for some who remember, that even had a boxing ring at one point. But Project Striker is a series of three production studios for Riot Games. And, you know, this is a big step for them. And I think for really a lot of companies today, they're seeing that they need to up their production. They really need to get themselves out there. In order to grow, you need to stay relevant. You need to stay known. And a studio like this for a company this big is just the thing that they think is going to be successful. So I've seen the photos. It looks pretty cool. I would go work there. Like, it looks like a fun spot. The article is a little skeptical of being like, oh, out of Dublin, Ireland, on these city outskirts. And it's like, yeah. Yeah, that's actually not a bad spot. I thought this was worth mentioning.
It's cool, right? They're basically centralizing all of their production, right? These are basically, this is like a hub that every, production studio that's outside of this little hub can link up to and, you know, benefit from all of the web infrastructure that they built in this little room. It's cool. It shows that, you know, they want to do something like 24/7, 365 esports streaming. And now they can do it with this, this centralized bunker of production, everything, hardware, software. It's interesting that they're putting such an emphasis on their live streaming, right? They're doing a lot at Riot, and it shows how important having good production and connecting with your fans really is for a big esports company.
100%. And that's what I like to see, especially for a company with so many IPs and Project L coming out hopefully in the next year or two here. This is going to be a good time. So we'll keep track of them. We'll see how they're doing. Esports.net reporting about mobile games, or specifically mobile gaming phones, getting out of hand with specs. So there is a race to produce the best phone with the best specs in order for mobile gamers across the world to be playing their mobile games. I mean, whose phone is going to be king? And so, you know, a lot of phones these days have really been upgrading themselves left and right. Now, one of the biggest mobile gaming markets, Jacob, if you could guess on Earth right now, what country has the biggest mobile gaming market?
I want to say India.
It is India. You are correct. India is one of the top countries for mobile gaming. The problem is that one of the best phones in terms of specs happens to be the Apple iPhone.
It's crazy.
That is kind of crazy when you think about it, because the things that Android does and many of the other companies, especially out east, try to do is really try to up their specs, up what they have to offer. But the Apple iPhone is just an all-in-one package of specs that so many developers kind of just, you know, they say, listen, an iPhone is the perfect way to experience my game, and that's what I'm going to put it out on. And the iOS store, as we know, Jacob, it is a hard store to navigate. They are very, very picky about what is in an app, you know? And so you've got to go through tireless steps. But once you do, the payoff is huge. The problem is that not everyone in India can afford an Apple iPhone, which is why you constantly see those videos on YouTube of people being like, I purposely had my hand out my window with my iPhone to see how many people would try to steal it from me on the streets of this Indian city. And I'm like, wow, so nice of you to be able to show how people are desperate to get their hands on someone's iPhone to try to sell it or have it for themselves. Again, you know, it's cool to see that, you know, there's a competitive space for mobile phones. In fact, I almost included another article in today's lineup here just about the boom in mobile gaming. Although I don't think that's anything new. I've heard this since 2010. It's like mobile gaming's going to blow up, and it has. Like, it's so, so big. And I feel like gacha gaming is one of the biggest players in the space when it comes to mobile gaming. Like, we've seen FPSs come and go. We've seen Fortnite on the iPhone. I've seen, you know, Call of Duty Zombies when I was younger on, like, the iPad and an iPod Touch and stuff like that. Like, there are so many different games, not to mention all the ripoff games and obviously Clash of Clans, the various card games that can be played on mobile as well. Like, it is a never-ending market of, you know what, else can the phone in your pocket do to keep you entertained and to keep you on it more and more? So,
yeah,
super cool to see. Kind of unfortunate, though, that, you know, the iPhone happens to be one of the best phones in terms of specs, but it does make sense when you've got a phone that has such a great commercial appeal that companies want to build their apps for it, especially. So,
yeah. Well, one, you know, interesting quote from the article is that Genshin Impact can run at 120 FPS on most later iPhones, such as the iPhone 6 Pro, but no Android device, regardless of the specs, can run it as smooth. Right. So it's not even a hardware thing at this point. It's a software thing, and it's a compatibility issue. Right. iPhones just have the lead, and it's unbelievable how well these iPhones can play games. Right. It used to be where, you know, you mentioned Zombies, that would be glitchy and that would be laggy.
Yeah.
But iPhones run games so well at this point, right? I play TFT and, you know, when I'm playing it in not a really competitive way, I play it on my phone because it runs so well and it's so convenient, right? Genshin Impact is a higher quality game just in terms of there's more characters moving. It's kind of less a controlled environment. And it shows you how ahead of the game iPhone really is, right? It can run it at 120 FPS and no Android devices can do that.
I agree, man.
It's interesting.
It is. And I kind of wish that their laptops could kind of make that jump next in terms of PC gaming, because I think that, you know, if a MacBook Pro could really handle League of Legends, then we'd be talking. You know, I don't want to just play Minecraft. You know, I want to play Fortnite and League of Legends on my Apple laptop. Okay. That's what I want to do. You know, that's what I call my 2015 MacBook Pro. So, for those of you who are curious, that might not be able to run the newest games anymore, but, you know, it's okay. Back in the day, it ran League at a sexy, like, 70 to 80 FPS. It was great.
Yeah.
We'll see. Okay. Next up, moving on to some NFTs. We've got some good stuff here. Yuga Labs faces a potential class action lawsuit over inflated Bored Ape Yacht Club NFTs. Diving into this article a little bit more, you see that they talk about how, Yuga Labs used celebrities in order to inflate the price of NFTs. Man, there are going to be a lot of class action lawsuits if that's the case, because any NFT, just like any product, right, is usually endorsed by influencers, celebrities. I don't think this claim has much pull in court, when you could point to a million different things in real life and go, Chanel's inflating the price of their perfume by having Selena Gomez represent it, right? Or Snoop Dogg is you know, inflating this record label because he's signed to it. I mean, I just feel like there are a million different consumer products where it's up to you to do your own research on what to buy and not just to listen blindly to a celebrity. So I don't think this class action lawsuit goes anywhere, but it does say something about the space in terms of, you know, pumping up NFTs just for the sake of insider knowledge. But that's not the same as, a celebrity told me this NFT was going to be expensive and I bought it. Now I lost $30,000 in my house. It's like, no, that's on you. That's on you. That's not on Snoop Dogg. That's on you.
You know, basically, it rests on the point that these influencers, and the pinnacle point is that they promised returns, right? By over-promising high returns, that's the only way that Yuga Labs could get in trouble, right? If they're intentionally having these influencers say, you're going to get back 30% no matter what if you buy a Bored Ape Yacht Club, that, you know, that borders on the line of you know, selling a security and basically selling it with the assumption that's going to make you money on the work of other people, right? That is security. That deems it as a security, and NFTs, you know, can't really be sold like that unless they're registered as such. And I don't know if Yuga Labs did that before they sold them. Yeah. Right? Probably not, considering it was started very small. It's interesting, right? This stuff is important. And it, as I mentioned, it rests on the fact that you can't promise a return on investment based on the work of others, right? And that work would be other people buying the NFT. It would be the staking mechanics that are associated with it, right? They already have a security given the fact that they're giving out ape coins to all holders, right? That is a security. So it's interesting, right? They're in a tough spot because, I mean, them and a lot of the other NFT projects, they broke securities laws and everyone did it. There was no regulation. There was no anything. It was an evolving industry.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of hard to prosecute just one of them. It may be kind of like a reset where some regulation comes in place and they say, okay, what you did in the past was okay. You must do this from now on out, and any new projects must follow these guidelines. I think it's going to be tough to execute suing Bored Ape Yacht Club on this frontier, but it could set a precedent for new NFT projects.
Yeah, well said, Jacob. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Up next, we've got the Order of the Egonauts, launching the fourth series NFT in its series and collection, paying tribute to Gary V on July 27th. So this collection is dropping with a bunch of Gary V heads on NFTs, celebrating Gary V, this very well-known influencer and social media kind of like monster in the space. I mean, he's really mastered quite a bit of using TikTok to his advantage, really having this like up and coming story. You know, he claims to be self-made, right? You know, he worked at his parents' wine store until his late 20s, and then basically amassed a huge fortune for them and maybe himself as well in launching their wine shop as like an online business with like live online wine sales daily. And like, it's pretty cool what they did with it. And as the article kind of goes on, it talks a little bit more about what he's done, but his work with V Friends and what he's been doing lately, he's been launching V Friends as a trading card game, and people are trading V Friends like trading cards like crazy. I think it's hilarious because in no way is the game competitive. It's just for the sake of the fact that, these specific rare NFTs, not even NFTs, just the art and stuff are on these cards. And then people are like, ooh, I want to own this special card, because they're putting, some type of status of wealth upon one of these, individual cards. And then other people are buying into that same assumption that, oh, this card is worth money. And so Gary Vee is creating his own economy around his own set of like card games. It's hilarious.
So what I'll say about Egonauts is please don't buy them, because these guys don't have licensing rights to use Gary Vee's face on their NFT. They certainly don't have licensing rights to use Elon Musk's face on their NFT.
Yep.
So this is yet another project where we just saw NFT Worlds got absolutely shut down by Minecraft. If Gary Vee wants to say you can't do this anymore, he can do that. And unless he's making a sizable amount of the returns from sales on this project, I don't think he's welcoming it. He has his own NFT collection. This looks like something that's really out of line, right? It's they're launching a collection with Elon Musk and Gary Vee, unless they're licensed. This means nothing, and it should be avoided.
Yeah, I didn't see anything big time in there saying that they had the licensing rights. So it definitely is a little weird for sure. So while we don't provide financial advice, this is a do not buy. This is a do not buy for sure. Faux show. Interesting to see the tribute to Gary, though. A lot of people are obsessed with him, and so I'm not surprised to see something like this, but it doesn't mean that it makes it better or good. So, period. Okay, this next one actually has to do with us quite a bit. BC.game, what is it? An online classic crypto casino offering, some of the most classic ways to offering slots, live dealer titles, house games, all done with crypto. BC Game has taken on thousands of players over the years, started in 2017, and in 2022 was rated one of the best crypto casinos of the time, offering more than 60-plus cryptocurrencies, and it's recognized by the Crypto Gambling Association, however legit they are, right? Pretty cool, seeing as that, they've got a sports book, daily lotteries, NFT adventures, that sort of stuff. you know, being here at Zen Sports, you know, we're always looking for the next best thing in terms of innovation. And this is definitely one of those things, I got to say. Now, this article specifically talks about the D-Gen Pass, which, you know, it says that it's going to be providing some great utility as an NFT. And definitely, you know, there are only going to be 1,777 of them to be given out. And then, you know, kind of looking at this, like, what does it do? It says that it's supposed to bring users significant advantages, which I get it, but at the same time, in the long run, I don't know. I don't know if I really want to give someone a point, what, 0.1, 0.2% chance over somebody else, or maybe if it's even smaller. Maybe it's a 0.01% chance of doing better than the people next to you, right? Like, yeah. It's got to be some small calculatable number for people to have some slight advantage that actually doesn't screw over your casino, because at the end of the day, the house still wants to make the most money possible. But these D-Gen passes are a way of having some, maybe some of their biggest crowd pleasers, their biggest bettors, come on in and say, hey, we really appreciate you. Buy into our NFT, get some advantages, get some good stuff going, and you know, enjoy. You know, again, I wanted to include this because I haven't heard of crypto casinos. So,
yeah. I mean, it's interesting, cool. Right? A lot of these crypto casinos try to operate without licenses, right? They basically say they're crypto. They're on the blockchain. They don't abide by any state's laws. These guys are a little different, right? They have acquired a Curaçao license, right? They also looks like they have a sports betting side of things as well, right? But if you're using this and you're, yeah, so I got a forbidden location, right? Which is what I should get. Maybe the casino laws are different because I'm not getting a forbidden location on the casino. There may be some gray area where they feel like they can operate a casino without the proper licensure because it's crypto, right? And that's the important thing, is because it's crypto. If they were doing fiat here, they'd be in a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
But it's interesting. You know, they it seems like a reasonably legitimate project. I agree with what you're saying, though. Right. They can't make these NFTs in a way where they're going to lose money. Right. They're going to make the NFTs in a way that's going to make you think you're making money. But in the end, right, it's the house. They're there to make money. It's pretty simple. It's interesting, though. They have a lot of games on here. It's a lot of white labeled games, like that crash game where it goes up and you have to, you know, get out before.
Oh, yeah.
Everything crashes. That's famous, really popular.
Game. Famous online game right there.
So who knows? It's interesting to look into, though. Maybe we should see how the NFT drop goes and cover it again once it's over.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, this will be a good one to follow. This will be a good one. Okay, this next article I thought was hilarious. Chipotle going all in on the crypto market being down. They say buy the dip with a new $200,000 contest. On top of that, they're offering 1 cent guac for National Avocado Day until the end of July. This is hilarious. You love to see a company getting in on relevant news and just, you know, being relevant in general. Like, you know, telling people to buy the dip is too funny. Now, whether or not the company actually has shares in Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency encouraging people to buy the dip, that's another question, right? I think it's legitimate for a company to be buying into crypto these days with Tesla's acquisition of Bitcoin and Dogecoin. Although, you know, with the reports this past year of Tesla selling off 75% of their Bitcoin, you know, I'm sure many companies are like, ooh, do we really want some of our assets still in crypto anymore? Do we want to liquidate and get it in cash again? Because we've talked about this many times already. As long as crypto is proportional to the US dollar, it's always going to be like, okay, how long do I hold until I just sell to get my real money back? Because no one goes, oh, I've got my real money because I've got 32 Bitcoin. It's like, well, no, you've got your real money because 32 Bitcoin times 20-something thousand dollars is quite a bit of money. And so that's what matters. But
yeah,
I mean, you know, this could just be a PR stunt. But I also like to think of this on the other end and saying maybe this is not such a PR stunt beyond the fact that, like, yes, it's National Avocado Day, but they're taking advantage of the fact that the market is down and they're going to make a joke out of it. And maybe this joke has some deeper meaning. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the actual game was like, you know, whether it's a fun game or not. It's a cool, you know, I checked it out. It's a cool branding, right? Buy the dip. That works well for them. I always wondered why these brands didn't have games on their mobile app, like simple addicting games. Like instead of Stack, why don't they have Burrito Builder, where the highest score each day gets a prize, right? That's just an easy way to build brand loyalty and get people on your app, right? Which is where you want them. It's interesting. I want to see what the game looks like. I'm definitely going to check this out after. They're giving away a lot of money too.
So that's a marketing. It's pretty funny. Chipotle's good. I had it the other day for the first time. In fact, I might get it today too. We'll see. It was pretty good. It's been a while, so you know, I got myself a burrito. I think next time I'm going for a bowl, and I'm going to pace myself. I kind of rushed through it, and afterwards I was like, "Ooh, I did not need to rush through that burrito." Let me just tell you that.
I eat a ton of Chipotle. Chipotle's great. I love.
It's
I love
great Chipotle. Protein, man. Great protein. Huh. Yeah, you know,
it's a lot of sodium, but it is great protein. I'm looking at one of these crash games. I'm looking at one of these crash games on BC Game. It's at 20x. So someone just turned 52, or someone just turned 200 in Tether to 4,600. It's at 40x right now, which is fucking crazy.
Wow.
I've just stared at it. These games are. I was thinking I got to get into this, but you really don't. So it just banged at 60x. The highest payout was 24x.
Wow.
But you know, that's interesting stuff. I don't know. Chipotle, it's good. I think it's good for them. I think it's good branding. I think it'll be a successful play.
It's a good time. It's a good time. Okay. Next up, Mark Cuban talking about the SEC coming down on those Coinbase product managers that we talked about before, who were trying to really pump up the price of some cryptos that were going to be releasing. And so the SEC's come down on them. Mark Cuban, though, coming forward to be like, listen, man, you know, you think this is bad? Wait till you see what they come up with for the registration of tokens. And in this tweet, he goes, that's the nightmare that the crypto industry is waiting for. How else do you keep thousands of lawyers employed and create reasons to ask for more taxpayer money? Mark Cuban is obviously not a fan of the government stepping in and getting involved with crypto, especially because crypto's whole point is that it's, you know, this way to transfer money between people without a central authority, sort of. I mean, you still have these exchanges that the money has to go through. But at the end of the day, Mark Cuban is not a fan of the SEC. That's what I'm seeing here. And on top of that, back in 2014, Mark Cuban actually like released a video about him specifically asking the SEC about crypto. And man, you think back to 2014, we barely understood what crypto was in 2014, right? We had Bitcoin and not much else. And the SEC basically directed him to rules back from to the 1980s because they had no idea what to classify crypto as, because they didn't have anything to go off of besides like, oh, we've heard of Bitcoin, but we have no idea what that is. Check out these laws from 1980. Bruh. Like Mark Cuban's had enough of the SEC. And he just knows, I mean, you know, a billionaire like himself, he just knows that the government wants to go out. They want to make money. And, you know, if they can make money, they're going to make money. It's just what they do, period.
Yeah, this has been said before. I think Mark Cuban said this a few times before. And I don't know. I'll take his word on it. It is going to be a lot to regulate. So it's interesting, right? It's going to take some time. The SEC is not just going to throw something out there that doesn't work in the long term. So it's probably, a while until we see legitimate crypto regulations. But when they come, they're going to be structured forever, right?
Well said. Well said. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a pain. Although I then found this article, which complemented this one pretty good. U.S. senators yesterday were pushing a bill through the House to make small crypto transactions of $50 or less free of tax-free, which that's pretty good. Now, I didn't dive into this article too much, but all you got to wonder about is who has enough time on their hands to do, you know, how many crypto transactions at $50 a piece to be tax-free. I you got to wonder, is there a cap? Is there some type of provision so that, you know, you don't have someone trying to transfer $1 million worth of crypto in $50 payments so that it's tax free? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big deal. So that's $1 million. Someone's going to do it. You know, it's going to take a while, but, you know, it can happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they'll probably have some sort of limit on there. You can only do, you know, one transaction a day or two transactions a day, tax free. But
yeah,
it's an interesting idea to basically lower the barrier to entry. But what's the point of buying $50 in Bitcoin, right? You know, Bitcoin, you're probably not using it as a, it's not, you know, crypto isn't really ready. I mean, in some coins it is, but not really ready to be used as a payment option, right? It's really an investment strategy for most people. So it's okay. I don't see a ton of the value it adds besides getting people in, right? Getting new people into the ecosystem, just dabbling, putting $50 in, seeing where it goes.
I agree. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I mean, it's not really speaking for the whales in crypto, but you know, the whales are going to, they're either going to stay in when this legislation passes or they're going to get out before it does. One of the two.
Yeah.
One of the two. And our last article today is one that does not surprise me, but I think it's one that some are skeptical about. This article from CoinDesk talking about crypto's coming to esports and it's coming to economics. Now, we know crypto is already involved in economics because of the war in Ukraine. We know that Bitcoin is one of the best ways for money to come in and out of Russia. We know that the UK, before Boris Johnson was just ousted as prime minister, you know, he was a big advocate, including the government and parliament, for the UK setting up like an official crypto mint in their national mint. And so we know that what it plays on economics, right? But how about within the economics of esports games? Now, Minecraft just came out and said that they don't want NFTs. I'm going to assume that Minecraft is not going to start accepting Bitcoin or Dogecoin for you to, you know, buy whatever. Now, you know, what are the purchases in Minecraft these days? Well, the purchases in Minecraft these days are really on the Xbox. They're really on the PlayStation. For the PC, you buy the game once, $23.99, something like that. And then after that, you know, PC gaming is PC gaming. It's always been free to upload a different skin. You know, it's just that Minecraft has added different IPs to their selection besides a sandbox game, right? They've got, what, Dungeon Adventures, something like that, where, you know, players can go on these vast, wonderful stories of different Minecraft worlds that have been pre-built and stuff like that. That's what you're paying for Minecraft, yeah, right? But when we talk about games like Fortnite, Call of Duty, the newest Halos, or even Destiny 2 or beyond, right? Building games with crypto inside of them is going to be a real challenge, and we've talked about this time and time again. Until I can start buying crypto with a credit card or debit card very easily, it's going to be real difficult to just put it into a game because, man, the amount of times I see videos online of parents freaking out about a, you know, $1,000 Fortnite bill, right, or more, right? That's not even the least of it. But it's so easy to rack up dollar after dollar with microtransactions. And if crypto is going to take longer than a few seconds for a credit card or a PayPal to go through, it's just not viable. And, you know, at the end of the day, what company wants to take the time to have to take in crypto and then have to go back and cash it out at some exchange? Because once again, crypto is still proportional to the US dollar or to whatever local currency that they may be in. So, you know, I argue that this is really more troublesome for any esports company than it is a good thing. I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to reinvent their business model if crypto takes over.
For sure.
But what I see is, you know, these games are basically testing platforms for the economies of tomorrow, right? Whether, you know, and how long, you know, major economies are going to be crypto based. Mm-hmm. They're going to be based off of the games that work and which don't, because games are just endless and repetitive simulations of people's choices, right? And they're a great proving ground for testing out how these economies can work on large scales, right? A lot of these games have 400,000 daily active users, and they're managing how do we keep the price of our token stable while giving people choice and giving people opportunity to spend their currencies and invest in us and in other things, right? And there's, you know, huge staking platforms that exist in all of the major games, and staking is an integral component of how to build out and make a longevity, build longevity into your crypto ecosystem. So I think these games that exist today are basically building the framework for which future economies, whether they're games or not, will take on.
Well said. Well said. We'll see what happens. You know, we'll keep with it here, and I'm sure there will be someone to take a step forward into the space and go, okay, this is what we're going to do, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Well, folks, that's all we got time for today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Esports Forever podcast. Big shout out once again to EMP.money, our sponsor. Go check them out. They've got so much going on over there that you just can't believe how much they have going on. They're above peg. It's a good time to buy. Again, always do your own research. Don't just be blindly putting in money. But, you know, EMP.money, just because they're our sponsor, you know, we're sitting here, we're being honest, right? You know, yes, they help us out and we help them out. But at the end of the day, they are a group that cares about their community. They know what they're doing. And they're not shysters, okay? That's not what they are. They're not shysters. They're the good people, especially the founder, AJ, correct? Is that the name of the founder there? Jacob?
Say it again, AJ?
AJ, yeah, right, the founder?
Yeah, he is the man.
Great. Good stuff. Well, hey, thank you everyone for tuning into this video. If you liked it, subscribe, leave a comment below, follow us on our streaming platforms, that sort of stuff. Until next time, we out. We'll see you then.